Chumba.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Now, welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road. Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Friday morning. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. I went to a coffee shop that shall not be named, and they messed up my order. But
but
they fixed it, so I'm good. There's my little story. That's my whole story.
Very well told. Michelle Knezovic, good morning. How are you?
Well, I went to said same establishment, and they didn't mess up my order. But also, I can never be that person. If they mess it up, I'm afraid to be like, hey, this is wrong. So I just sadly drink it.
Well, so, yeah. But I mean, like, when you go, I want a hot, like, latte, and they go, here's a cold frappuccino.
Oh,
like, I can't. No. I don't want a milkshake. You know
no,
what I mean?
No, that's fair. Yeah. That's very fair.
Don't
and
want
it's
a milkshake.
Also cold out.
That was very nice, by the way, because remember,
of course.
We do not, we frown upon, on this program, we frown upon shaming people. And I was very, very kind.
Yes,
so I
we
want
do.
You guys to know that.
Rex Road getting all over people this early in the morning for messing up with their food.
I told you a latte. I did not do that, I swear.
I told you. Oh, man. We got a lot to get to on the show here today. We'll have Teron Davenport coming up at 8 o'clock, get his thoughts on the Titans and the Chargers. John Glennon joining the show at 9 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans, also his thoughts on the Nashville Predators as well. You're going to hear from Mike Sando coming up here in just a few minutes at 6:30 for his thoughts on the Titans ownership situation and the firing of John Robinson. But Joe, we do begin on the Nashville Predators, and they lose again last night, albeit in overtime, to the Winnipeg Jets, 2-1, the final score. And Joe, just kind of, quite frankly, a lot more of the same. You don't really score much. You score one goal in the game. Your power play doesn't help you at all. And honestly, Joe, if not for UC Saros last night, I mean, they probably get beat 5-1, 6-1 in that game. I mean, it was Saros was the only reason that game was even close, and he was the one that got that to overtime last night.
I mean, is that the best he's played this year? I think that's the best game I can remember from him, like just in terms of just the volume, the quantity and quality of saves in one night.
I would agree.
That was vintage Saros. And so this week we've seen him. That was him against St. Louis, right?
That was.
Yes. We've seen him allow one goal in 120 minutes of regulation hockey in two games the Preds did not win.
Yeah.
Hard to do.
It's very hard to do. And it's very hard to believe you're getting anywhere as a team if this is what it's going to be. And we've talked about this. Their offense is a gigantic problem. You know, Forsberg gets the goal last night.
Good for you.
Yeah, thanks. Another chalk one up for Preds pick to click. But he also, you know, in the second period, was it late second, early third? I can't remember when exactly it was. You know, he gets hit right in the face with the high sticking penalty, and albeit he's off the ice for most of that 4 minute power play,
right?
But you get a double minor power play, and you just never really did anything with it. And all of a sudden, he comes back on the ice, Winnipeg, or he gets a penalty called on him, and that power play is over. I mean, they're just such a mess offensively. And again, I've said it, I feel like a broken record this week. We're this many games into the season, it feels like a sample size of, all right, well, is it going to get any better? Because We're 28 games in, and there's been no sign to me that it's getting all that much better.
Well, and I think, I really think that at this point with the power play, you know, it's interesting to look at last night's game after we talked to John Hines about the power play. And it's a good illustration of, obviously, this is the job of all these people. I mean, they analyze everything forward, backward, every single detail down to the granular level, and they can tell you exactly what's going wrong or what needs to happen or how to execute it. And yet it's so different knowing that and understanding that and explaining it and then actually executing it, because I think they're a mess on the power play. Like it's all hard to watch. It does remind me of a couple years ago, or how many years ago was that? The year that it was just really bad. That was the 18-19 season, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now that year was so – it was different. That was basically like Subban, you know, from the blue line, and then, you know, see what happens, right? I mean, that was a different situation. They have – that's what's weird is they figured it out with the same people, and they had such a good thing going last year. I don't – it's hard to grasp, like, going this much backward on that thing. But that's what's killing them. I mean, it's why they lost to Edmonton. And ultimately, it's to me, the problem. Offense, yes, for sure. But, I mean, if you don't have a power play to speak of, then it's going to affect your offense.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, here we are again. St. Louis, Edmonton, Winnipeg, now down the drain, and you've lost all three of them. Now, the good news is your goaltender has gotten you points in two of them. You know, you get shut out in the first game. And look, I understand that we're talking about an 82-game season and that the process sometimes is more important. And I've heard a lot of, well, they played well in St. Louis on Monday. Great. They played well, and they didn't score a goal.
Yeah.
And that's a problem for the Predators. I don't really care that they played well in St. Louis. You lose that game in overtime, you get crushed by Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and now you've lost in overtime again last night. And, oh, by the way, Colorado coming up on Saturday night on the road. Edmonton back at home here on Monday. So, I mean, look, based on the way they played, it's hard for me to believe, Joe, that they're going to win either one of these next two games.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that losing streak goes from 5 to 7.
Yeah. And at some point it gets, it really gets loud. The negativity around the team if they don't figure it out. The thing is, I really enjoy, I thought last night's game was fun to watch. That was an entertaining game. And I do liked a lot of what they did. I feel like in the D zone, they even with the injuries, like I feel like they've got some things figured out, but they are sustaining nothing in the O zone. And you know, they almost had, it was a fantastic pass from Ekholm to Duchesne that almost got them, you know, and that's one of those where, like, you know, if you just lift that a little bit, I mean, it was a fantastic play, then, you know, maybe you find a way to win that game, right? 2-1. But I don't think they got to 10 shots until like the last, like, you know, couple minutes of the second period. They cannot establish any kind of forecheck. So along with the lack of a power play here and there, they're getting these bursts. I mean, even the Forsberg goal was a nice pass by Duchesne, but you know, that wasn't, I mean, you don't, like, if you're Winnipeg, that shouldn't be a goal. Right.
Right.
I mean, they are not establishing anything really. I mean, the territorial battle last night was pretty lopsided.
It was. And then when you do get chances, you know, you're not converting it. And last night I fully realized Connor Hellebuck has been really good so far this year. And I know how good of a goaltender he is, but even like the move Cody Glass makes, right? He puts it behind his back between his legs and he cuts to the middle of the ice. Like, you got to score on that play.
That was pretty sweet, though.
I mean, it's a sweet play, but great. You got to score. when you get chances like that, you have to score goals, and they just cannot do it right now. And it's really amazing to watch. With this collection of talent and this collection of players that, you know, that I've seen play before at the NHL level, the fact that they're having this much difficulty offensively is a gigantic concern to me. And I can't really explain it. Like, the power play, you can explain, right? You're like, okay, well, the power play is just broken right now. But 5-on-5, like you said, there's zero sustainability to it. They can't sustain really many good offensive shifts at all. There's not much zone time that they're creating. And when they do create zone time, Joe, It just feels like they're just passing it around out there on the perimeter. I don't. They just look totally broken offensively.
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, you know, Cody Glass. I mean, that was kind of cool seeing his dad and his brother, and they on that move. You know, they pan to the crowd and they're like, "Oh my!" Yeah, that would have been quite a story. Kid who grew up there, you know, making that play after what he's been through in his career. But also, C-Mace a lot on the broadcast last night talking about, okay, they're getting shots and it's fine. You get shots up, you know, get shots on goal from the outside. That's fine. But then you got to have someone there. This is another kind of like old theme that's being recycled is net front presence, you know, hard areas, et cetera, just it's like nobody's home too often when they do get the puck on net.
Yeah, and now all of a sudden you're 12-12-4. And like I said, there's plenty of season left. But, man, the more you continue to just kind of flounder here, the worse off you are when it comes to the playoff picture. I mean, look, Colorado's holding on to that last playoff spot right now, and they're at 32 points. It's going to be difficult for anybody to convince me that once Colorado gets healthy, they're not going to go off on some surge here. So, like, Colorado's going to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right now, they're the closest team to you. Edmonton's pulled away to 35 points. The Kraken are at 35. You know, Minnesota's at 34 in your division, so that's good. But Winnipeg gets another win last night. Dallas gets another win last night. Like, teams towards the top are quickly pulling away from you, and it's December. Like, I understand teams pulling away from you in February and March. Like, last year's Colorado team had pretty much pulled away from everybody in February and March. It's December, and the Predators are so far behind the Dallas Stars right now that it's hard to imagine you catching up. That should not be the case before Christmas.
Right. Like I think the Preds are better than the Canucks, you know, like I would have to, you know, go ahead and project that they would finish ahead of them. But, you know, you look at the Pacific because of the Kraken and the surprise team they've been, Knights, Kings, Kraken, Oilers, Flames. Okay. I mean, there's five teams, and then your own division. St. Louis being down helps, but like you said, Colorado, Minnesota, Winnipeg, Dallas. So you are closer. You said it yesterday. It's true. Still today, you're closer to the Blackhawks, you know, at the bottom, at the very bottom of the conference than you are to the Stars at the top of your division. And, yeah, look, it's at this point, they're setting themselves up for a situation where they'd have to go on a tear you know, to get themselves back in good position if they don't stop the bleeding here soon.
We're off and running here today on Robbie and Rex Road, taking your thoughts on the Predators at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. What do you make of this week for this hockey team, and is there any chance that this team can get out of the mess that they're in right now? 615-737-1025. We'll have more on that coming up next. Let me tell you about my friends at FanDuel Sportsbook. Now it's the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because right now new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's free bets back if your first bet doesn't win. All you have to do is sign up with promo code ROB. The Titans and the Chargers coming up on Sunday. I'm going to take the Chargers on the money line, and I'll take Derrick Henry as an anytime touchdown scorer, but you can take it any way you want to take it. Just make sure you do it on FanDuel Sportsbook, all in an app that's safe, secure, super easy to use. They've got great live betting options every single day, and when you win, you get your money paid to you quickly. So sign up today with promo code ROB for your no-sweat first bet. Once again, that promo code is ROB. Make every moment more this season with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. First online real money wager only. Refund issued is non-withdrawable free bets that expire in 14 days. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Got a gambling problem? Call Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda J. Gentry. We are live here on this Friday morning on Robbie and Rex Road. Taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. The Preds fall last night 2-1 in overtime at the hands of the Winnipeg Jets. They'll be back at it tomorrow night on the road, taking on the Colorado Avalanche as well, who, by the way, Joe, They also lost last night, so maybe an angry Avs team, a very injured Avs team coming up on Saturday night. We'll see how the Predators respond to that. Logan on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says the Preds just need to bleed out. Also, if Poyle stays around a couple more years, this franchise will be right there with the Coyotes as being the doormat team in the league. This is coming from Logan on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Oh, my gosh. Sorry. My headphones were so high, I just freaked myself out with my voice.
Joe scared himself this morning.
Whatever happens in the 6 a.m. hour, remember. You know, it's interesting. Correct. We have the Athletic, we have future rankings coming up, which I think we do that every year. Sort of, you know, looking at current roster, farm system, et cetera, you know. And I will tell you, without giving anything away, the Preds are not high in the league right now when it comes to future projections, you know. And I mean, that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. I mean, basically, you know, I think Luke Evangelista is an exciting prospect. Obviously, Parsonen is a sure. Nice story. He's a good player. You know, Afanasyev. Did I say that correctly? I think I did.
You nailed it.
And obviously Askarov, you know, which is – so, you know, Saros starting to look more like Saros again, and you remember how good he is last night. You're like, yep, that's why he was a Vezina finalist last year and should have been one the year before, right? And then Askarov so far, I mean, the returns this year are pretty promising on Askarov. But, I mean, other than that, you compare, you know, what's in the pipeline to and go around to a lot of other franchises, and or it's the, you know, prospects and just young players they have on their team right now. It doesn't look great.
Ron on the text line says the way they're playing right now, I can see them finishing December with 2 wins, one from the Ducks and one from the Blackhawks. Not a very good finish to December. And to that point, Colorado Saturday, Edmonton Monday, and then they do have Chicago next Wednesday. Then Colorado again, Dallas, Anaheim, and oh, by the way, Vegas right after that. Like, Chicago and Anaheim are the only two teams they've got left on the schedule in the month of December that are below them in the standings. And, you know, do I think that the Predators are going to lose every one of these games against all these other teams? I don't think so, but right now, with the way their offense is playing, I can't take that off the table as a possibility. Like, you're going to need to score more than one goal to beat Colorado, Edmonton, Dallas, Colorado again, and Vegas. Like, you can't score one goal in those games and win.
No. No, I mean, it's – and, you know, even, again, like last night, I mean, it's good that you get a goal from Forsberg. But as we've talked about, sustaining offense – I mean, getting anything consistent, and then the disaster of the power play. I thought Duchesne, you know, he set up the Forsberg play with a nice play. You know, he was right there after a tremendous Ekholm pass to score again. I mean, you're seeing flashes from him, but there's just not enough out there at all. So I don't know what, you know, look, I mean, to me, with the state of Colorado right now, the state of the Avs, that is.
Yes.
And they could go in and win that game. I mean, if it was regular Colorado, you can almost just chalk it up as an L. But they could go win that game. But like you said, like where do you find the offense? I mean, it has to be the power play, but I think almost now it's like decline penalties at this point. You know, it's gotten that bad. They seem to have just no like chemistry or connectivity at all on that thing.
Which is amazing, considering it's basically the same people from last year on the first unit, and they've moved things around, and they've broken things up. But I mean, last night again, you had that top unit back out there. It's amazing to me that this is the power play that has taken place so far this year. Josh from Cookeville on the text line says this Preds team was so much fun to watch a few years ago. They could battle back from any deficit, it seemed. Do you all think the firing of Laviolette was a bigger setback than we realized? Y'all have a great Friday and weekend. This is from Josh from Cookeville.
I would say no. I think it was around that time for Peter Laviolette. Like, it gets to everywhere. I don't think. Let's if you want to talk about how fun they were to watch. So we've been talking about the 18-19 season, which was the power play season, right? I mean, that team got hard to watch because of that. Yeah. the next year's team was hard to watch, and he got fired. You know, honestly, for most of the past several years, they were fun to watch basically the second half of the 2021 season and the first half of last season. There was about a year where they were fun to watch. And other than that, I think that they've been hard to watch for most of the past going on 5 years now.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I mean, obviously, President's Trophy season, fun to watch.
Oh, man.
A lot of winning they did. A lot of really good teams that they beat and a lot of good hockey that they were playing that year. Really from that point until, like you said, the second half of 21. But really, I think when you factor in the whole picture, I'd go as far as to say really from that point until last year was when they were really fun to watch because people were scoring. You know, Forsberg and Duchesne were scoring left and right. You had Janot scoring left and right. You had the physicality they brought to the table, all those different things. And that's kind of the other part, and Elliot Friedman was talking about this a little bit yesterday with the midday guys, and it's something that I guess I hadn't thought that much about, that when he said it, it made a lot of sense. Now, last year, how many times did the herd line kind of drag him into the fight, for lack of a better term? I mean, the physicality, the forecheck, everything that you had, and I realized the herd line has not been together as much this year, and partly because of what I'm about to say, I think it's the reason. But when's the last time you felt like the Predators and their physicality and their forecheck was really dragging them into a game and helping them in a game? It just doesn't feel that way right now. It feels like they can't really establish it. They can't get the puck, the physicality. They don't seem overly physical to me out there. They're just chasing the game a lot. It just when he said that, the issues with this team right now run deeper than just not being able to score on the power play or not being able to score 5-on-5. They're not doing a whole lot right out there. Defensively, I would agree. Like, I think they've figured out some things in the defensive zone, and obviously their goaltender's playing well, but the forecheck and everything that made them successful last year, it's not looking great.
I think I said this on the air, but maybe not, but I went to the Anaheim game a couple weeks ago and sat real close to the ice. And the one of the things I remember walking out with Brennan and Caroline, I don't remember a serious hit in the entire game for the Nashville Predators. I mean, it was just because you figure, you know, from that vantage point, you really get a sense for that stuff, right?
Yeah.
I left that game saying, I don't remember anybody actually hitting someone hard in that game, which is so weird to say and to think about this team, because that's the thing. Last year, when that line took a shift, you knew they were going to establish a forecheck, and they were going to do it with seriously bad intentions, you know? So you could count on that at least. And then a lot of others, you know, the power play is great. Like you said, the other guys are scoring. I mean, the whole thing, Riosi's having the year, like all that stuff was working for him. But no matter what, consistently, at least until late in the season, that line was going to get the puck deep, and then they were going to make it hell on the opponent. And, yeah, that does not exist right now because they're not together, but also, like, no one's doing that.
Yeah. April in Portland on the text line says, I'm beyond frustrated as a fan. The vibe at Bridgestone is terrible. The Boo Birds were out on Tuesday night at home. A Fire, Poyle, and Hines chant broke out in the cell block. I'm okay if we lose, but I wish they'd tell fans what direction they're going in. Saros is the only reason they're doing as well as they are. Their decisions make zero sense. Tomasino's not on the roster now. Tolvanen gone. Hines' system is dog water. He changes the lines too quickly, and they can't find any chemistry. I don't get it. I want Hines and Poyle fired. That's a start. This from April in Portland on the text line with an impressive use of dog water.
Nice use of dog water. And April, who typically, I would say, more on the optimistic side, is calling for firings. So I did not realize the Fire Poyle, Fire Hines chant in the cell block. I didn't know about that. Do you know about that?
Yes, I don't think it was overly loud.
Okay,
if that makes sense. But yes, I was told about it.
But still, I mean, that takes a lot to get to that point.
Yeah, it absolutely does. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Take your thoughts all show long on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, you'll hear from Mike Sando from The Athletic. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans, their ownership situation with Amy Adams Strunk, and how the decision to fire John Robinson is viewed around the rest of the league. That's coming up next. But first, Michelle Knezovic has a word from Superbook Sportsbook.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Robbie. Listen, I hope you listened last night because the 49ers made you some money if you listened to my advice about Superbook. And Superbook is going to help everybody make a little extra money during this holiday season. Everybody's probably shopping just under 10 days until Christmas. So they want to know if you can make your parlays pop this holiday season. Win some money from Vegas with the weekly parlay bonus from Superbook Sports. If you place a three-team football parlay, Superbook will give you a $10 bonus voucher. It's your holiday bonus courtesy of Superbook Sports. Okay, I'm going to tell you some of the games that I'm liking heading into the weekend. The Indianapolis Colts and the Minnesota Vikings tomorrow. The Vikings are favored by 4. I think they cover that spread pretty easily. They need to bounce back, especially after that loss to the Lions last week. Another game I'm looking at, you got the Miami Dolphins in Buffalo to face the Bills. Listen, it is going to be so cold up in New York, and I don't know if this Miami team will be able to handle it. We've also seen some of their weaknesses lately. I think that Buffalo wins by more than a touchdown. And then finally, we got the Dallas Cowboys and the Jacksonville Jaguars. I think the Cowboys also have a bounce back week after that close one to the Houston Texans. So give me the Cowboys to cover that 4-point spread as well. So like I said, place a three-team football parlay and Superbook will give you a $10 bonus voucher. So rack up the wins and earn some holiday cash by betting parlays with Superbook. Download the Superbook Tennessee app and place your parlays today. Visit Superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Michelle Knezovic here with you, talking Titans. And to help us do that, we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Mike Sando from The Athletic. Mike, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. How are you?
We're great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. And Mike, we were just discussing a very interesting piece that you've put together at theathletic.com in your pick six column about the Titans and everything that's gone down over the course of the past couple of weeks with the firing of John Robinson and the way that Amy Adams Strunk has handled that situation. Let's just start with this. What's your takeaway, your viewpoint on how this move is being viewed around the rest of the league?
Yeah, I think the view from afar is, okay, wait a minute. This doesn't add up. Sure, John Robinson had a couple, you know, bad draft picks, but the team's had success, and he got a good coach. He got a good quarterback. This must be some sort of a power play internally that's going to benefit the head coach in some way. That's the view from afar. And I think people watched, you know, Mike Vrabel during his press conference and maybe backed off of that a little bit. Like, I mean, he was pretty, you know, he seemed pretty genuine in his comments there, and so you're left to sort of wonder, okay, that's kind of what it looks like, but we're not really sure, and maybe the next step of what happens next will help define that. But I think most people in the league inevitably feel like it's whoever they get as a GM is probably going to be more acquiescing to the head coach than dictating to the head coach or having an equal partnership. But we'll see.
Well, if that's the case, Mike, how much do you limit your pool if that's, I guess, made clear, you know, in the process that, yeah, ultimately Mike Vrabel is going to have final say? How prohibitive is that when you're trying to find a really good GM?
Yeah, I don't know how prohibitive it is because these jobs are scarce. They're hard to get, and people take them. You know, it's rare that you have somebody. An example would be like Chris Ballard, you know, was kind of picky, didn't immediately take one. And then he takes the one where he thinks you're going to have a quarterback for 10 years, and within 2 years you don't have the quarterback, right? So, I mean, to me the lesson is kind of like you sort of got to take these jobs. I feel that way with head coaching jobs too. None of them is the perfect job. So whoever they get had better get along with the head coach, right? I mean, you don't want someone to come in and then they're at odds, but just sort of when you do it this way, you know, it's probably going to be set up to really tilt towards the head coach because he's built up a lot of equity. He's had a lot of success. They've won a lot of games, and people, you know, probably correctly perceive him to have a huge thing to do with that. I mean, 3 weeks ago I wrote a column talking about what the rest of the league can learn from Vrabel's Titans. So I think that stuff still stands. This is just a little bit of a jolt to where we're like, whoa, okay, wait a minute. you know, be careful now, because the parallel that I drew in the column was to the Houston Texans. I mean, I think Bill O'Brien, obviously, who worked with Mike Vrabel, had a lot of equity built up because every year they had a winning record and you weren't sure how. They were rolling out T.J. Yates and Ryan Fitzpatrick and Ryan Mallett and Brock Osweiler and all these guys, and then they would win and go to the playoffs. And so, you know, after a while, what happened was the GM there, Rick Smith, who had a pretty good track record, he's out. And then they hire his replacement, and then he's out in a year. And then pretty soon, you've got Bill O'Brien trading DeAndre Hopkins, Jack Easterby's in the house, they're trading up the farm for Laremy Tunsil, and you go, whoa, that starts to look like a, you know, kind of an empowered head coach who, I think by nature, coaches can act impulsively in those types of things, right? You just, any of us with power would act impulsively sometimes if we had that type of power. So I think the partnership part is key. You need someone there, a personality to play off of him. I do a podcast every week with Randy Mueller. Randy Mueller worked with Jim Haslett. Jim Haslett was his coach with the Saints. They won a playoff game for the first time in Saints history. Jim Haslett was a linebacker like Mike Vrabel. Randy Mueller was a quarterback. It was a different personality. It was like, hey, Jim, hold on here. Let's back up, right? Because the linebacker sometimes wants to run through the wall or do something aggressively. So, you know, I think that's what we'll be looking for, is just what is that pairing? What is that tandem? How does the power accrue, you know, from this point forward?
And, of course, Vrabel, as we used to call Robinson and Vrabel, were a D lineman and a linebacker combo. So, you know, they played bully ball. So, Mike, you know, I put this on our Slack channel, the Athletic, our NFL Slack channel, just trying to figure out, like, how many coaches in this league right now have, you know, final say, I guess. Is it? And it quite a few responses on that, too. So is it basically to the point now where if you have a certain level of success, it's likely that you will ultimately get to that as a coach in this league right now?
That's probably true, yeah, as you get there. You're at least going to have control of the 53. There's different levels of control, right? I mean, at the end of the day, if the owner doesn't want the coach to trade a certain player, they're not trading them. So, you know, it's within the parameters of that. And I think there's sometimes the feeling or consensus within the building when you're making a really major decision. Yes, the coach might have the ultimate power, but what everyone else thinks is probably going to matter in that equation to some degree. But, yeah, I don't think they're going to bring in – well, we'll see. I don't want to speak for the owner because she has said that it is important to her that these are two different roles. But I think when you have success as a coach, you tend to go towards more of that type of power. And Vrabel's had great success as a coach. When people, I think they're the only team since he's been there that has exceeded their Vegas win total every year. He gets a lot of credit for that. He probably gets a lot of power for that. We'll see.
Mike Sando from The Athletic with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Mike, the Amy Adams Strunk angle of this, I think, is really intriguing from the standpoint of, you know, it's in terms of big decisions. She's not made that many thus far during her tenure as owner with the Titans. What does this tell you about her as an owner and maybe what we're learning about her as time continues to move on here?
It seemed impulsive to do it in the middle of the season. It didn't seem as strategic to me. And I think that's, like we were talking about, when somebody has the ultimate power, I mean, that's kind of what happens. You just sort of sometimes do things. And I didn't see a strategic advantage to doing it, unless there was some pressing problem inside the building or something we don't know about. We haven't really heard that. I think one of the differences with the Houston Texans situation was you kept hearing about how Bill O'Brien was at odds with Rick Smith or whatever. We haven't really... Other than Vrabel, we knew wasn't really happy about the receiver situation, the trading of A.J. Brown. We didn't get a huge bunch of reports saying that there was some fire that needed to be put out. And so when you make a major move like this during the season, I kind of call into question just the strategic nature of it, of the owner. Are we just making the type of move that Bud Adams would make, right? You know, where you're just sort of, that's it, last straw, we're doing it, whatever it is. And I didn't feel the explanation coming out of it was, you know, put that to rest at all. So, you know, you're right. You don't have 1,000 transactions of an owner to measure. But I think there's a little bit of an unpredictability there. And that's another Texans parallel, too. Both of the owners of these two franchises are the offspring of team founders, right? And they have a little bit shorter track record. They probably have a little bit less experience in this realm. And so when you're watching them, you're not really sure that we have a full understanding of where they're coming from.
Well, to follow up on that, what has been, from your conversations, and you have tons of conversations with tons of people around this league, what has been the viewpoint of Amy Adams Strunk as an owner in this league in the last few years? And have you heard that too? Some people kind of being taken aback by this move and maybe looking at her a little bit differently.
I think they're much like everyone else where you don't really know. I think that there's not a great body of work and people are reading it from afar. And shoot, I live in the Seattle area and no one knew that much about Paul Allen. He owned the team for 20 years and now his sister is running it and people are trying to figure out her, and she's been doing it for 2 years. And during that time, they've traded Russell Wilson and done things that we didn't know was going to happen. Right. And so I think they're the same as everyone else. It's not like these owners necessarily are meeting every day or having deep, in-depth conversations that trickle down to the management level into the realm of the types of people that I'm talking to all the time. So I think it's a little bit of a guessing game along those lines. We may read too much in any one move because it's all we got.
Well, Mike, it was a really intriguing column at the Pick 6, which people can check out on theathletic.com. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and thanks for doing it. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. Mike Sando The Athletic, our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Joe, that's some really intriguing stuff there that Sando has thrown out there. It's just particularly not knowing specifically who he's talked to, but executives, people involved with the league, and how they view this situation here with the Titans, pretty interesting.
Yeah, and again, I totally understand the impulse of power struggle won by Vrabel. I tend to believe at this point, I do believe, I believe that the power struggle, if there was any assault mounted by Vrabel, it was in, I think, probably just not being able to always contain his frustration publicly with some mistakes John Robinson made and with the state of the roster. I don't believe this is something like that, but I also have no idea how Vrabel wants this next phase to work out. And how many coaches are going to turn down having more power?
Not many.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you have disagreements. I'm sure that Vrabel could probably tick off more than just A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, a few other things where he disagreed with John Robinson and it didn't work out. Now, were there some things Vrabel wanted that – were there some W's for Robinson over Vrabel when they disagreed? I'm sure, But it does sound like, I've learned through this that, the final say – and we asked Charles Robinson about this too. There's the 53, but then there's whatever move it is, and ultimately it's your call. And there is more of that in this league for coaches than I realize. And it's not, again, it's not Belichick doing the whole job. I don't, there's no way that's happening. I think we know that now, right?
Yes.
But look, I think Sando made a great point. If you can get a really good person simply because, look, man, there's 32 of these. And if you think you can go to a place and win and have success, then it's still a fulfilling job, then great. I do have to think there are some GM candidates out there who don't like the idea of coming into a place and then being overruled from the start. But, it sounds like they should be able to get someone good.
We'll have more on the future of the Titans coming up next. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Make sure you check out the Eddie George Show featuring Jonathan Hutton on 1025-1063 The Game on Tuesday at 6 o'clock, live from 6th and Peabody. The Eddie George Show brought to you by Low T Centers and Xander Insurance. Xander gives you more options. More options means more savings for you. Get your free quote at XanderInsurance.com. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game. Looking ahead to the Titans and the Chargers coming up on Sunday. And Joe taking a look at the injury report again yesterday. Still no Christian Fulton dealing with a groin injury. Still no Treylon Burks going through the concussion protocol as well. Robert Woods back out there yesterday
after dealing with the illness on Wednesday, and another limited participation for Danico Autry with the knee injury. But Jeffrey Simmons not practicing yesterday. Derrick Henry not practicing yesterday due to not injury-related rest with Derrick Henry. But obviously that ankle still a problem for Jeffrey Simmons, and they're got him on his weekly routine now. I would assume that he plays on Sunday, but still no Treylon Burks, particularly for the offense, Joe. Hard to imagine that he'll be playing at this point coming up on Sunday.
Yeah, it doesn't look good for him, and doesn't look good for Fulton, and those are two huge situations, you know, and that they need. Autry, I don't know. It's going to be interesting today. Vrabel, obviously, will give the people who are out today. I do wonder. Yeah, I think with Simmons, it's kind of what you expect. I mean, you know what? He has an ankle. The ankle's hurt, and it's probably not going to be 100% till he can get, you know, 2 weeks off, which he could have had if they would have won a game, but Sunday. But I wonder with Hooker and with Davis, Nate Davis and Amani Hooker,
yep,
are they also kind of on that Jeffrey Simmons thing, which do a little bit Wednesday and then take Thursday off? Or is the fact that Davis was downgraded to DNP and Hooker downgraded to DNP, both with knees, does that mean something different? Those are obviously two really important people too. You know, you look at the secondary, I'm just going to rule out Fulton. I mean, because in this game, it's all about pass defense, right? It's all about affecting Herbert. It's all about being able to, you know, cover for a little bit of time if you can. So you got Trey Avery looking good for coming back, and he has been another one of those corners that they bring in, you know, and he's a rookie this year, but I mean, he hasn't been bad. And Vrabel, after one game recently, and I forget which one it was really gushing about him. Mitchell hamstring limited both days. That's a big deal. And you get Terrence Mitchell back or not, you know, and if Hooker can't go Sunday, I mean, Hooker has become the new slot corner. So then you have to figure all that out with McCreary, you know, Avery, Mitchell, all that stuff. Meanwhile, really surprising to me, Robbie, Lonnie Johnson is a return from IR.
Yeah.
Designation, which means, and there's a bunch of guys who are on IR who in theory could return. I mean, I think you can just rule out Cody Hollister. I know Kaharsi's going to be upset about that. He can't make Cody Hollister jokes, but I think you probably rule him out. But, I mean, you're talking because Cunningham is set to return. So you got three people who could matter a lot, and one of them can come back. David Long Jr., Kyle Phillips, Elijah Molden. I'm assuming it's Long. Now, if it's not Long and if he's just done – oh, then that's a bad deal for this defense. If it is Long, then, you know, the whole Kyle Phillips thing will end up amounting to, like, few plays really, really early in the season and then just unable to do anything, which isn't great, obviously. And then Molden would be my most likely to probably rule out. But I was surprised that Lonnie Johnson got one of those IR returns.
Yeah, I was too. And like I said, the first thing the first thing I thought about was, well, what does that mean for David Long Jr.? Because if they don't have him, I know it's linebacker and it's not as important of a position just from an NFL scale as it was back in the, you know, early 2000s, just with the way the games played. But I think I'm not putting the whole thing on David Long Jr. not being out there on Sunday as to what transpired on defense and what Jacksonville was able to do. But I think there's a pretty noticeable difference on the Titans defense without David Long Jr. And if he can't come back this year, I mean, they're in a bad spot.
Yeah, look, it's 11 people out there, and it's about making plays. The guy makes plays. He runs, he covers, he blitzes. He's really good in the run. I mean, he does everything well. And he had a rough game against the Bengals, but and of course he's been banged up some too, but that's a massive loss if they don't have him. I'd be very interested to see if they get, you know, they get Cunningham back, what that means. That's been a complete bust of an investment this year, but we've seen enough of Zach Cunningham playing this league to think that there could still be some. In fact, late last year, I thought at times that's why they paid him, because he had some good games. yeah. in there. Now, there's a big difference. Dylan Cole's been a great story, and certainly he's one of those guys really accountable, and he hustles, and he's maximizing himself, but they are a different defense with Long or without Long in particular.
Bingus on the text line says, if and when Autry comes back and the defense plays a lot better, wouldn't that mean that he is the most valuable player on the defense, which would then make Simmons less expensive to sign in the offseason? I'll hang up and listen. This is from Fingus on the text line.
Yeah, let's not go overboard there, Fingus. Here's the thing. You know, actually, Jared and I were talking about this on the Jared versus Joe. And I agree with what Jared was saying, was that if you went back and looked at how they played in the last couple of years, and you were paying them based on performance, basically, it would not be a big difference. I mean, Danico Autry has been a bargain. He's been underpaid relative to his performance.
Yeah.
But Jeffrey Simmons is entering his prime. And look, I understand we have this small sample size of combo of no Autry and Simmons is banged up. And so I get people saying that, but you got to look at what Jeffrey Simmons has been through his career, and in particular, last couple of years before he got hurt, and his price tag is not going down because of Danico Autry being valuable. Danico Autry goes on that green side of the, you know, check marks for John Robinson in a tremendous move. Now, if you want to talk about pay, you just flip flop salaries, Bud Dupree and Danico Autry, that would be more just.
You know, I feel like it's been a while since we've had some Titans optimism to talk about, but we've got some on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron on the text line says, in the past, this team seems to play its best when they have to fight through adversity, and I believe this is the week they put up a good game plan and leaders step up and motivate others to get the job done. Titans 20, Chargers 16. Matt on the text line says, I truly believe this team is going to go to L.A. and win. Their backs are against the wall. These guys know what's at stake, and we're going to see a different team this week. Joe, optimism on the Titans front on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
How about that? You know, we get to Friday and we get some optimism. I like it. You know, people are feeling better on a Friday, right? So I get it. By the way, did you mention that Fingus told us he's 5'9", 265?
I did not mention that, but
thanks for your
Fingus apparently is 5'9", 265.
Thanks for your dimensions, Fingus.
We are not giving ours.
Yeah. Well, actually, I probably should give an update. It's not going well. now, look, hey, I don't think this team is done competing. I don't think this team has zero hope of anything good happening. I still think that, you know, there's value in winning your division in the NFL, even if it's a bad division. And I think they're going to respond and everything. My question is this matchup just the worst possible matchup for them to try to have a bounce back week on the road? It might be. But you tell me right now they're going to go win this game. There's no astonishment or shock in this league. And the Chargers have been very up and down.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question about that. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, lots of conversation around Mike Vrabel the last couple of weeks. How much are we going to learn about the Titans head coach for the rest of this season and what it means for him as he moves forward here? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.